Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm one of your hosts, Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Caldoni.
And this week we've got an interesting little mystery. It's pretty recent, actually. This took place in the faraway exotic land of Minnesota. And to make it even more exotic, it was actually up in the far corner of it, kind of really close to Canada and just a little bit west of Lake Superior, kind of up in that corner.
Yeah, it's called the Boundary Waters.
Yeah, scary area, I guess. I don't know. Never been there, actually.
I've never been there. I'd like to. It looks kind of cool.
No, I'd like to go, actually. It's kind of cool. Well, anyway, this is one that you dug up, Vincent. You want to give us a little intro to our mystery?
Sure.
Okay.
Sean Williams is a conservation officer from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources in Ely in the far north of Minnesota. And in April of 2019, he gets a call about a pickup that's been abandoned in a remote area.
Pickup truck.
Yeah. He actually had been aware of this since the prior October because it was blocking up a gate on private property.
They actually, this thing was sitting there for like 6 months, right?
Yeah. And they actually knew whose pickup it was by this point. So what they were doing is they were actually trying to find his campsite, the pickup's owner's campsite. We'll get into that. So this is right in a place we're talking about. It's called the Boundary Waters. It's in the far north of Minnesota. But when Officer Williams got this particular report, he figured all he was going to end up doing is finding the owner and asking him to move the truck. As you said, blocking a gate near this thing called the Sioux Hustler Trail.
Yeah.
He had heard that the owner of the truck was out there somewhere in the Boundary Waters camping.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been trying to locate this truck, the truck's owner, since the previous October, but he hadn't been successful.
Wow. I got to say, that's some remarkable patience, because typically, you know, in law enforcement, they usually slap a sticker on it and 3 days later, they tow it away.
This isn't a really remote area. And Williams, remember, he's a conservation officer.
He didn't want to leave the guy high and dry when he came back to leave and his truck's gone. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so I think he was trying to be patient with the guy. And I don't think it was super urgent. I think if they were, you know, it was like blocked somewhere. They didn't tow the truck, and that is nice. So Williams took a Border Patrol agent with him. Remember, this is really close to the Canadian border.
Yeah.
And they followed a path up into some very remote country looking for the pickup's owner. I think, although I didn't find this out, that they'd had a tip about where they could find him.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the more isolated regions, they found the guy's campsite, but they did not find the site's owner.
They found something worse.
They found what at first they suspected was a crime scene. The campsite looked mostly intact, except for one really disturbing detail, and that was
blood. Lots and lots of blood, right?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially in the makeshift tent. And so he kind of had like a tarp set up as a tent. We'll get into that. And he'd been sleeping in that, and it was just drenched in blood. I mean, it was almost certainly a lethal amount of blood loss.
Mm-hmm. But there was no body to go with it, was there?
No, the blood's owner was nowhere to be found.
But the blood's owner, we do know who did own that blood, correct?
That's true. So we're going to dive today deep down into the mystery of the fascinating life and odd death of Jordan Greider.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni, this is The Shocking Details.
About 2 years prior to the discovery of all the blood in the campsite, Jordan Greider arrived alone in northern Minnesota with a plan to camp through the winter in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. You can find that, by the way, pretty easily on Google or wherever. Jordan was 29 years old, originally from Moriarty, New Mexico. He was a very experienced outdoorsman and kind of an odd, unique person, I think. He spent about the past dozen or so years living off the grid in the backwoods of Kentucky. At one point, he lived in upstate New York, again in the woods. And he had recently come to northern Minnesota to be near water. Now, this was according to his mother, Rebecca. His intention was to winter over at the site, the campsite that was discovered later by Officer Williams, near a beaver dam with a nice little reservoir behind it. It was an isolated spot, difficult to locate. It was kind of in a sheltered area that would protect it from the north winds, because apparently that area does get some pretty harsh winds from the north in the wintertime. So he chose a site wisely, I think. Not quite wisely enough, apparently.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, the site was protected from those really cold north winds.
Just not protected from aliens and Bigfoot, but oh well. You know, okay.
His mother told the Duluth News Tribune that Jordan used to tell people, quote, "I'm not homeless. I have a home. I just choose to have it outside."
Yeah, Jordan was, he's not, perfectly okay guy. He just kind of marched to a different drummer. He didn't, which is perfectly fine. I mean, we don't all have to have the same goals. He loved living outside. So that's fine. Whatever.
That was his life.
Too bad it didn't work out for him. So no one had seen Jordan since October 10th, 2018. Did I got that date correct?
Yeah.
And he was seen in Ely, which is the closest city. Jordan was the third of six boys in his family. He actually, at a young age, had a little bit of an issue with reading and education. He was diagnosed as dyslexic. His mother felt he needed to be homeschooled, so he never actually did any form of public education. But it doesn't mean he wasn't intelligent or talented. He apparently had a knack for learning musical instruments and loved to play them. And he later did tell his mom that he kind of wished he had pursued becoming a professional musician. He also, by the way, carried a backpacking guitar that was found at his campsite. Yeah, whatever. I'm not sure. What is a backpacking guitar? Is that just a smaller bodied guitar?
Yeah, or is it a that's really all it is.
It's like a ukulele with a longer neck on it, maybe?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I saw this reported as a ukulele, but I saw a picture of it, and it definitely is a six strings to backpacking guitar. So it's been miniaturized.
Yeah.
I think it's got a shorter scale neck, and it's got a much more compact body. It doesn't make a loud sound when you play it, but whatever. It's a guitar.
Yeah, well, that's kind of cool. Jordan's brothers, like their parents, were a little more conventional than Jordan. They owned small businesses. They had fairly typical lifestyles. Jordan, again, was marching to a different drummer, and he'd spent his entire adulthood essentially living off the grid. At first, he would camp in the woods surrounding the places he'd go, but he often had a job in which he would shave and keep himself clean and all that stuff. So it's not like the guy looked like a homeless guy or anything like that.
No, if you look up pictures of him, he was well-kept. He had nice clothes.
Yeah, it's just that he didn't have a house. He lived out in the wilderness, but he wasn't a bum or anything like that. He was also a friendly, sociable guy, and he kept in touch with his family. And he visited them, I think, not too long before his untimely demise.
The last place he was before he went up to Minnesota was with his family in New Mexico. At one point he worked building furniture with the Mennonites for more than a year, and that was in exchange for not pay but an acre on which to camp, which is pretty nice. He worked at a salsa processing plant, he worked at Walmart, and he worked at a place that made whiskey barrels.
Oh, sweet.
And he just sort of drifted from job to job while he camped and traveled around. During his travels, Jordan fell in love with a woman, and for a few years there, he was with her in Kentucky. He became kind of a father figure to the woman's three children. He baked them homemade birthday cakes. He taught the kids how to use both a sickle and a lasso.
A lasso? Oh, that's important.
On his girlfriend's property, he grew grain, which he then milled and baked his own bread with, which is pretty cool. And he grew a peppermint patch, and he harvested that and made herbal teas from it.
Mm.
I'd like to quote one of the big sources I used for this was the Duluth News Tribune. There's not a lot. This is a pretty recent story, and it was a very local story. So while I did use other newspapers, and the AP News Tribune really had the big stories on it, that's where you should go if you want to find out more after this podcast. So what they said, and I really thought
you need to know anymore. We're telling you everything you need to know.
Exactly.
But you can if you want. Sure. Go knock yourself out.
I really liked what they had to say about Jordan in this one little quote. They said, quote, "He used up little space with modern thinking. He often wondered why people were so mean to each other." I thought that was really a good way to talk about how Jordan seems to have viewed the world. So I wanted to quote them on that. And at some point, the call of the wild and his need for independence and solitude drew him away from his more domestic life in Kentucky.
Yeah.
He left them behind.
It does sound to me like a guy like him wouldn't last very long with this whole stepdad to three kids and, being a homebody and baking and all that stuff. No, he should be out in the woods,
I think so.
The bears. Yeah.
So he challenged himself to spend a winter camping in upstate New York, which he survived. And having been to that part of our country in winter, that's no small feat. It gets cold up there.
Yeah, I know. Good for him. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, this guy should have been alive, you know, like 200 years ago, back in the Mountain Man days. He would have.
I think he would have been great.
Yeah. Before he left for his final journey to Minnesota, Jordan visited his family in New Mexico for a few months. Then that lasted through his birthday. That's in late September 2018. And he told them what he was planning to do. And even though they didn't think it was a fantastic idea, it sounds like they didn't really want him to do this, but they had already learned a long time before this to not try and stop him. He was going to do what he did. That's that. And so, you know, they didn't try that hard to discourage him. Typically, they'd be concerned about, you know, his safety and also just about his future. Like, dude, when are you going to get a real job? And,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Exactly. And he would just, you know, sort of blow them off and not listen.
Yeah.
And so they didn't want to alienate him any further. So they just, you know, went kind of light on that, on their doubts. And so at the end of the visit, off he went. And unfortunately, they never saw him again.
Yeah. So back in Minnesota in April of 2019, Officer Williams found a hammock situated under a big green tarp that was strung over a guard wire.
That was his makeshift tent you're talking about.
Exactly.
Sounds like the kind of tents that I made all the time when I was a kid, like in the Boy Scouts. You know, I didn't have a fancy tent. You know, a lot of the other kids didn't either. Usually it was a tarp over a rope, that kind of thing.
And for most camping scenarios, that's going to work pretty well.
Yeah.
A lot of times I think people buy way too fancy stuff.
Oh yeah.
That's what he'd done is he'd basically, if you can imagine, he had a hammock and then over that he'd built a very rudimentary tent out of tarping.
Yeah.
And Officer Williams also found a loaded 9mm Beretta pistol in the hammock with extra magazines.
Yeah.
Remember that. This one detail I think is very important, but we'll come back to it. So just remember the 9mm.
Yeah, and it was blood in the hammock along with the sleeping bag. The sleeping bag was also in the hammock, correct?
So, yeah, the way it works is he was sleeping in a bag inside a hammock with a tarp over it to keep any moisture or rain off.
Yeah.
And that's where all the blood was. Officer Williams found so much blood.
In the hammock, the sleeping bag, the ground beneath. Yep. Yeah.
It had soaked the hammock in the sleeping bag. It was on the ground underneath it. It had spattered across the walls of the makeshift tent.
Mm-hmm.
He felt it was very unlikely that Jordan was still alive if this was his blood, which I don't know, you know, it's hard to imagine who else is.
The tarp and the hammock and the sleeping bag were intact, correct? They weren't shredded?
Not at all. Not even a little bit. They were in actually really good shape. You can look up pictures on the internet.
Yeah. Interesting.
But there were signs that wolves and other animals had been through the campsite.
Well, sure. Of course. Why not?
Yeah. Yep.
It's their Williams backyard. Observed, of course they were.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Williams observed footprints and scat. And one thing that, if we're talking about wild animals, beaver dams are choke points for travel through forested areas.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that.
Well, they come to get water, I assume, right?
Well, they come to get water there in the summer, and then in maybe not in the winter when things are frozen over, but in other seasons where you maybe wouldn't want to be swimming around in the water, the beaver dam acts as a road where they can cross. It's like a bridge.
So,
you know, go ahead and look up, you know, beaver dam trail cam or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They are hunters and wildlife enthusiasts are very aware that these are points where you will get to see a lot of animals.
All right, I don't make friends with the beavers.
You'll have some wolf friends too, so watch out for that.
Okay, all right.
Entire area, it was under 2 to 4 feet of snow when it was discovered by Williams.
In April, wow.
That was in April, yeah. So they still had a lot of snow there. And it really wasn't until that snow had melted away in May that any remains were uncovered. Just outside the camp, the searchers found just 12 bones, including a vertebrae, a piece of a human femur, and a possible chunk of a forearm.
Those last two fragments, they're
not even 100% sure what part of the body they came from.
Can we assume that they used DNA, familial DNA, to make sure these were actually pieces of Jordan?
You cannot assume that. I was not able to find that there had been any DNA analysis. What I do know is that they did some kind of testing. That's all I could get out of the Bemidji Times or whatever it is. They did not say that they did DNA tests. And that doesn't mean they didn't. That maybe, you know, law enforcement always does what's called hold back information. Maybe there's some reason why they're not releasing that. What I will say is that the family has been in better touch with law enforcement than, you know, I have been, than the press has been. And they don't seem to feel that there's any doubt that those are Jordan's remains.
Okay.
So take that as what you will. It is a good question. I was not able to say, yes, they DNA tested it. They confirmed it. It is definitely Jordan Grider. I don't really know what testing they did.
Mm-hmm.
It's also worth noting that the final two bones they discovered were discovered much further from the campsite by search dogs, like cadaver dogs.
Yeah, which could mean, most likely means that some animals came along and scavenged the corpse at some point.
Yep, absolutely.
Despite as many as 30 people doing grid searches of the area, with the assistance of teams of cadaver dogs, there were no more remains found of Jordan Grider. None of them were, not even his skull. And there, so, of course, there's never been an official determination of the cause of death because, well, yeah, I can sort of, how you going to do that? There ain't no evidence here to figure out exactly what killed him. I think it's fair to say that it was most likely foul play. I mean, in my book, you know, it sounds to me like you got blood spatter everywhere. That looks like foul play to me. Probably.
I got that in theories.
But the sheriff's department apparently has ruled out foul play. But actually, but even they are not exactly, I guess, 100% sure. But there's really no evidence to support that there wasn't foul play. But, you know, there's no evidence to support there was. So apparently they decided to pitch that theory out, which is
As we'll talk about it, one of the things is that they all of Jordan's belongings were intact, including his wallet that contained thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so robbery wouldn't have been a motive. I mean, so, yeah, they ruled out suicide because the gun was there. Loaded, but it had not been used. So it had not been fired.
I think they're working on the assumption that someone would much rather, if they had a gun literally in the hammock with them, would rather take their life that way.
Sure.
Which I think is a little specious, honestly. But
it makes sense to me. I mean, if I had a choice between, say, falling on my knife or hanging myself or just shooting myself with the gun, I probably would shoot myself. But not everybody thinks the way I do. I mean, you know, maybe Jordan wanted to kill himself, but wanted to leave a beautiful corpse and didn't want to, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, if you're taking your own life, you're already not in a rational state. So you would make a weird decision, like deciding to use a knife.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know. But let's see what else. They found his cell phone, which did not lead them to think that he was depressed or anything. Nothing they found on it indicated any kind of state like that.
Yeah.
But he had sent a text messages to his family about his food supplies and about how he was all prepared for the winter. And he seemed to be in good spirits. There was, you know, no detectable depression there.
Yeah.
So a good reason to rule out suicide. I would probably rule out suicide in this case.
Yeah, I would say unless some evidence comes up to support that, I would say let's put that one aside.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not impossible.
Well, you know, I mean, here's the thing about it is like, you know, the only thing he had to be depressed about is that he's unemployed and living out in the woods.
What's his choice?
But, you know, if that's really got him down, he does have the choice of just packing his crap up, walking out to his truck, driving to town and getting a job, you know? So, I mean, not a reason to kill yourself, really. But
again, it's hard to really scrutinize the motivations of people who are suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
That said, unless there's good evidence this happened. So, well, we'll talk about it in theories, but if he killed himself, we don't know what he killed himself with. And I think that really takes that one off the table.
Yeah, I know. It's because all his knives were accounted for too as well, I think, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to say. No one, well, we'll talk about it, but no one really knows how many knives he owned.
Yeah.
Every knife at that campsite, which was extremely sharp, was tested and had no blood of any kind on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they didn't find any like empty scabbards with, you know, a scabbard, but no knife in it or anything like that.
No, so. Nothing like that. Jordan's mother believes he never made it through his first night at the camp. She talked about it this way, that he loved to whittle. He would lay in his hammock at night and he would make carvings, some of which I believe she has. And there was no evidence of any shavings or whittled wood at the site. In her mind, I think it's a pretty smart way to think of it. She says that shows that he never spent a significant amount of time there. He would have done some whittling and there would be some evidence of whittling having been done, carving or something like
that. That's reasonable.
It's worth noting, though, that nobody has a firm grasp on what happened to poor Jordan Grider.
I mean, you know, whether it was his first night or his, you know, 10th night or whatever, what the hell? What the hell happened? Why all the blood, but yet no body and no damage to any of the stuff in the tent? It's so weird.
It's very weird. And we're going to talk a whole lot more about it. But first, let's talk about a little movie called Contactee.
Whoa, it's Contactee. Tell me more.
So Contactee is my movie. I made it. And it is available for streaming, at least for US and UK people, also Germany and Japan, if you have Amazon Prime. If you don't have Amazon Prime, I think you can still stream it somehow through Amazon. If it's with Prime, it's free with your subscription. And it's a story about this guy named Jay Rossi. He's a therapist. And he meets a patient who is believed to be delusional. She talks about being a UFO contactee, an abductee. As they talk, he begins to believe her stories. He doesn't think she's quite as crazy as she's been made out to be. So he takes her away from this facility, risking his career, up to this inn in the mountains to try and capture this phenomenon on tape. And I won't say any more because that would be a spoiler. That is where things start to get really weird. So that's Contact D. You should go watch it today.
Damn right you should. And we're back. So it's time to talk about our theories of what happened to poor old Jordan Grider.
Yeah.
There are some theories out there. And we're going to, of course, you know, come up with some fresh, new, original, exciting theories ourselves. Okay. So the oven just dinged, which means we've got some fresh, piping hot theories to dish up for you. Theory number one, foul play. Well, seems kind of obvious to me. It does and it doesn't. It seems like with about the blood spatter and everything, but yet the body is not right there. It would seem like foul play is sort of indicated. Of course, robbery was not the motive, I don't think, because all of his belongings, including thousands of bucks in cash, his cell phone, his gun and his knives, et cetera, they were found right there undisturbed.
Yeah, they weren't able to find anything. I mean, they didn't know every single thing he took with him there, but they weren't able to find anything significant that was missing. So there was no financial motive, no robbery motive.
Yeah. And of course, some people online have suggested this is kind of a cliche, you know, in the mystery world that, well, maybe he saw something he shouldn't have seen. You know, like he witnessed a drug deal or there were smugglers.
Yeah, I mean, he's near the Canadian border. So I guess there's that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The Canadians, it could have been just a herd of wild Canadians that came south and, you know.
Raiding Canadian Vikings.
Canadian Vikings came down and massacred a Yankee and boogied back over the border. I don't find any of that stuff credible. I would say under foul play. And what if he ran into a Wendigo? And of course, I'm not saying necessarily, you know, the Wendigo as in the terrifying creature with the antlers on his head and all that stuff, you know, that we spoke about a couple of months back. But what if he ran into a person who had either been taken over by the spirit of the Wendigo, or at least believed that he had?
What if Jordan was taken over by the spirit of the Wendigo and took his own life?
And, well, the problem with that, from a Wendigo's point of view, is, you know, if you kill yourself, you can't eat yourself. So that doesn't quite make sense. But, I don't know.
Wasn't suicide one of the ways to defeat the Wendigo? I forget.
Yeah, I mean, I know killing him was one way to. Yeah, I mean, in fact, it was usually the kind of only way most of the time was to kill him. But it is possible. I mean, Wendigo syndrome has really almost disappeared from the native tribes of that area.
It's true.
Almost. But this area actually is one of the areas where, you know, it did happen.
Nope.
It was documented to have happened back in the day.
He's so deep in Wendigo land.
He was in Wendigo land. And what if he ran into somebody who had been Wendigized and this guy, like, you know, killed him? You know, it could be, you know, that, you know, I mean, his hammock was like not shredded or anything like that. But what if he had gotten up and, you know, sees this guy coming to his campsite, gets up and he's like, hey, hi. And then suddenly realizes that this guy, there's something seriously off about this person. Seriously off. That his hair is standing up on the back of his neck. He turns, heads back under his tarp to his hammock where his Beretta is stashed. But unfortunately, doesn't quite get to it in time. And the Wendigo, like, nails him, and, you know, there's blood spatter everywhere. But he wasn't in the hammock, so the hammock itself is not, you know, doesn't have any knife slashes in it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then the Wendigo, of course, makes a meal of him and leaves his, you know, leaves his carcass there, and other animals come in and scavenge it and scatter the bones all hither and yon. Yeah. So anyway, I'm thinking foul play is a live possibility here. And then the Wendigo might have been a part of it.
I love it. I love bringing the Wendigo into this. Well, I think Wendigo or not, what you just said is kind of what this theory must come down to. That someone, for some kind of inexplicable reason, found Jordan Grider in his tent, maybe asleep or whatever, and probably did something like slash his throat. There really isn't any sign of struggle.
That possibility too. Yeah, he was asleep and they just came in the middle of the night. Yeah.
And that would explain why we don't have the instrument on site. Whatever did this to him, whatever cut him, is not on site. And how, you know, basically it would have to be something like an instant lethal wound, like slashing a throat where a lot of blood got spilled everywhere. And then the killer, for whatever reason, just walked off and let animals do the rest, or drug him out to the campsite and butchered him or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think he was killed in the hammock because had he done that, obviously his body wasn't found in the hammock. So he would have had to have, the killer would have, say, had to turn the hammock over to dump the body out in the ground, in which case the sleeping bag and the Beretta and the extra magazines are all dumped out on the ground as well.
Dang, that's now, a really good point, Joe.
Yeah, now maybe
That
killer,
makes this that much more mysterious, because you're right. The bag was in the hammock.
As was the gun.
Yep.
Now, and if I were the killer, would I pick up that gun and tuck it back into the hammock, or would I keep it? Which would you do?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he was murdered in his hammock.
Interesting.
But it does appear that if he was murdered, he was murdered, underneath his tarp. That does.
Yeah, I mean, the blood spatter had to get there somewhere. Yeah. He also had to be murdered in extreme close proximity to the hammock and the sleeping bag to get those things absolutely inundated with blood.
Absolutely. And so, So
let's talk about theory number two, because I want you to keep those thoughts you're having, because I think they're going to help us as we go down the list.
Let's go. There's some other theories besides foul play. So what's our second theory here?
Theory two is suicide.
Okay.
No one close to Jordan or anyone official actually thinks he took his own life intentionally. But this theory does persist. And for what it's worth, not finding quote unquote cries for help on his phone, I don't really find that to be watertight reasoning. That doesn't rule suicide out entirely, even if it makes it less likely. Sometimes people don't outwardly show signs of the pain that they're in.
I'm kind of curious about this, by the way. When the cops unlock somebody's cell phone and look at all his text messages and his emails and stuff like that, looking for any signs of this kind of stuff, do they run this stuff past any health, mental health professionals, or do they just make that determination themselves?
Well, they sure can do that. I just don't know that they did.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I don't have that information. Mm. Yeah. So there's that. But even still, like, even if you did run it by someone and said, yeah, it looks like he was just, tweeting happy go lucky stuff and texting his mom that he loves her, that doesn't mean he didn't take his own life.
Mm. Yeah.
And I will say that Officer Williams noticed something strange. He really didn't feel that Jordan had enough supplies to make it through the winter at his camp.
Yeah.
And it was a good place to have a camp, but he didn't have the things one would need to make it through winter. For example, this is one of the big ones. Sorry, I'm going off script. But one of the big ones, he didn't have a stove of any kind. Now, Jordan claimed to be able to make what's called a rocket stove. Look those up online. I made them before. They're really cool. Out of just about anything. But he didn't have that. So
that's another that actually kind of backs up his mom's theory that he was killed before, on his first night there.
Yeah.
He didn't. Maybe he was planning on building something like that and he just hadn't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, I think you're right. So people have taken Officer Williams' observations as saying that Jordan entered with no intention of leaving.
Yeah.
I just personally think that he like you said, Joe, sorry to jump on you with that, but I just wanted to get this out. Fine. Yeah, that you might be right, that it might have been his first night. He had a truck and he could get back to the truck. He may have been not planning to get everything set up. It was only around October 10th or 11th that he shows up there. The snow hadn't fallen yet. He may have still been building out his camp. He may have been intending to purchase a stove in Eli and bring it out there.
It might be as far as having supplies for the entire winter. Maybe that's a lot of stuff to carry up there in one trip, huh?
That's true. Yeah.
Maybe he was planning on going back to town and getting some more supplies.
Yeah, I kind of feel that. And for what it's worth, although I don't have a direct quote from him to this effect, I do know that Officer Williams, though he said this thing that just kind of set off this suicide theory, he doesn't think he took his own life.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a second.
Well, that's the thing is, if he goes up there intending to kill himself, why bother to huck all those? Because he did have supplies and stuff. Why bother hucking all that stuff up there if you're going to just kill yourself?
Yeah. I mean, he just walked out by the beaver dam, took out his knife, done the business, enjoyed the last few minutes before he went unconscious, and that would have been the end of it. Yeah. Why set up the camp, bring up the stuff he did bring up?
Yeah.
The whole thing, it's a little off, but there's one big problem though, right?
This is a big problem, yeah.
Where's the knife?
The knife, yes. You would think the knife would be somewhere nearby, wouldn't you?
Yeah, the knife has never been recovered. Every knife that was in that campground was tested for blood and came up negative for any blood of any kind, much less Jordan's blood.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of here is he stabs himself in the chest. Let's say he does this. He decides he puts the knife to his chest and he falls forward flat in the ground, driving the knife deep in his chest. And then, of course, the animals come in, scavenge the corpse, and some wolf, say, carries away a chunk of him that's got the knife still stuck in it.
Yeah.
But there's two problems with this, actually. He would have had to actually stab himself at least twice, because he'd stabbed himself and the knife had stayed in the wound, that he shouldn't have bled all that much.
Shouldn't have spattered, at least.
No, definitely
spatter
not.
Comes from, if you've got whatever instrument is causing the cut, generally you're not going to have a lot of spatter until that's taken away from usually like a carotid artery or some high pressure part of the body like that.
Yeah. So, you know, this is why this, but I'm thinking that, you know, if somehow he killed himself and left the knife stuck in him, stuck in his body somewhere, then it could have been carried away by animals.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the other option is that for some reason that we'll never be able to understand, if he slashed his wrist or cut his throat or something like that, that he somehow was able to get that knife into a pocket or a sheath and then it was dragged away with him.
There's that, or maybe he dies and the knife is kind of locked in a death grip in his hand and again is carried away with him. I don't know. But again, you would think that, I guess maybe the sheath was on his belt and that's why we haven't found
his
belt.
We haven't really found any of his clothes to speak of.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they found his jacket at the campsite and they're not even, it had blood on it, but they're not even certain he was wearing it. You know, it is possible the knife is out there. I mean, like, you can't rule it out entirely because the animals did so much to the site, but I don't know.
It's possible it got dragged away somehow with this corpse, you know, by the animals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. The suicide thing doesn't really work for me.
There's a lot here that doesn't add up. It's not that it's impossible, but there's a lot of ifs that have to sort of compound recursively to get to saying, nope, it was a suicide. And I'm not quite ready to make that judgment until there's more evidence.
Yeah, I'm actually finding Wendigo attack to be more credible than suicide, personally.
I'm kind of with you, honestly. It's not impossible, but you're starting to get pretty out there. And you're like, if he cut himself, then he put the sheath away. And then the animals carried the body far enough that he had the sheath and the knife on him and it was with him. You know, like, that's a lot of if.
Yeah. So
okay, let's talk about three, because three is really actually kind of the big one. This is kind of like the 500-pound gorilla in the room or whatever.
Yeah. So number three, we're talking wolf attacks.
Wolfie.
Little wolfies. Yes.
Yeah.
And initially, Jordan's mother, Rebecca, thought that this was a case. A lot of people on the internet thinks this was a case.
It's not the case.
On the other hand, it might not be the case it's not entirely consistent with the state of the crime scene. Number one,
no,
yeah, but yeah, I mean, let's go with you, for example, Vincent. You've worked with wolves. You know wolves a lot better than I do. So tell us
and more than that, I've worked around people who have devoted their lives to studying wolves and similar predators.
I gotta just tell you personally, I think wolves are kind of cool. I've never been pursued by a pack of them through the wilderness, but you know, maybe that would change my viewpoint on them. But I like wolves personally. I mean, they're neat.
So here's the thing, Joe. Wolves make great movie bad guys. They are legitimately terrifying. I've worked around them. They frighten me. They are one of the animals I've worked with. That makes me sound like I'm a keeper. I'm a custodian.
Yeah.
But they're one of the animals I've been around through my job that have genuinely frightened me. And that's not very many.
Do you ever actually get in their enclosure with them while they're...
Never. That wouldn't... If I ever found myself in the presence of a wolf, it would be under a supervised kind of scenario.
Yeah.
And it would not be in their enclosure. And I sure as heck wouldn't be alone. Mm-hmm. But in my entire, probably close to 20 years working with wolves, we don't have wolves right now. There was never not a barrier separating me and the wolves. And that's true for the vast, vast majority of our staff, including keepers who have special training to work with wolves. Because we keep our wolves wild. These are not circus wolves. And so when I'm talking about wolves and say, oh, I've been around wolves, I'm not talking about trained wolves, domesticated wolves, half wolves, wolf dogs. Yeah. I'm talking about real wolves who are kept as close to wild as we can manage in the setting that we keep them. That said, what I want to say is, well, wolves do scare me because they're smart.
Oh yeah, they're smart.
They're tricky. They're always thinking a step ahead of you. It's really strange. If you work around animals, you know, you start to realize wolves are terrifying because they're always thinking a step ahead of you.
Yeah.
And that is frightening, to be like, I've been outwitted by this dog. And if there was not a fence here, I would be being chewed on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. That's one of the things that's cool about them, though. But I know there's in this area where Jordan was, they're actually pretty thick up there. There's a lot of wolves up in that area.
Minnesota. So Minnesota has some of the most wolves, I think possibly the most wolves in the continental United States. Yeah. And they tend to situate themselves around this area in northern Minnesota. And we also know that the wolves were at Jordan's campsite.
Yeah, they even pooped there. They have footprints and poop and all that stuff.
The
more polite term, scat.
Scat. Yeah. They tore up his jacket. We know that was wolves that did that. This is where I'm going to start to depart from the wolf theory.
Yeah.
A University of Minnesota wolf researcher named Thomas Gable told the Duluth News Tribune that wolves attacking a grown man in Minnesota, wolves attacking a grown man in that area would be infinitesimally rare. In 20 years, there have been just two wolf attacks. One involved a starving wolf with a deformed jaw that attacked a small boy. So that leaves one where just a wolf just attacked the guy.
Yeah.
There have been zero fatal wolf attacks in Minnesota since the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Jordan would be the first in more than 120 years.
Yeah. That is the thing about it is wolves are smart enough to have figured out a long time ago that people are dangerous. We carry these things called boomsticks.
Yep.
And the boomsticks can reach out and touch you from a scary far distance. And wolves know this. And so they stay the hell away. You know,
you're dead right about that, Joe. It's not even just funny. They have a literal concept of things like knives and guns and bear spray. They know what we bring with us and that we're some tricky devils.
No, they're not the only ones. I mean, there's most of the animals out there know to stay the hell away from human beings. They know how dangerous we are. You know, that's another, the animals are, they're really like, for example, there's not too far from where we live. There's a big old elk refuge. You know what I mean? That's up by.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I think I know what you're going to say about them, about where they know to go and where not to go.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that's amazing is that, you know, it's empty most of the time, but on the first day of hunting season, there's all kinds of elk in there. How do they know?
They just know
this stuff. You know,
I've seen this up on Mount Hood National where deer will just be standing in one spot and someone who knows the area better than me would go, yep, that's where the national forest land begins.
You can't shoot them there, right?
You can't shoot them there. Hunting's here. Somehow they know where that boundary is.
I know.
And it's they're like, just standing there mocking us in case we have guns.
Neener, neener.
Yeah, exactly. So wolves, you're right. Wolves know this. You know, a wolf can take down a full-grown man, but it takes a lot of work and there's a lot of danger.
Yeah, but also besides this, he would have been presumably in his hammock or nearby at least. Mm-hmm. He had a semi-automatic pistol. So they managed to somehow surround him and attack him with such speed and ferocity. He didn't even get off a shot. He didn't even manage to get to his gun. Does not appear to have even touched it. And would have been savagely attacked in this tent and bled out in the tent, leaving blood spatter everywhere. But there's no sign of a struggle.
No sign of a struggle of any kind.
Not really, no. And definitely the wolves, I mean, they're not subtle in the way they did. They sort of like just pounce and tear you limb from limb. It's kind of awful.
Yeah, I spoke to some friends of mine from the Oregon Zoo who know about wolves. Mm-hmm. And they said, like, even if Jordan Greider didn't manage to get to his gun, Jordan probably had the weight advantage. So imagine he's laying there. He's got his hands within inches of his gun and a dog. It's a really big, strong dog, but a dog jumps on him. He doesn't even start to get to it.
Yeah.
No. That's pretty tough to imagine. But then even if that happened, once you've got a kill, a pack of wolves is going to descend on that to divide up the prey. Just that alone is going to mess up that hammock. They're probably going to rip that hammock down off its wire. They're going to tear that tent down. There's going to be scratches in it.
Yeah.
They're and not so, needy
yeah.
ears.
Yeah. And so it's, and so there's just, you know, there's all the blood loss seems to have taken place underneath that tarp. And so, they would have been a whole big old mess. And so,
but what is possible, highly possible, is that if the wolves came upon Jordan dead in his hammock, they may have, it would be very likely for them to say, that's a good meal for us. Let's drag him out of there to someplace where we're more comfortable eating him. And that could kind of explain how it wasn't damaged. But as you brought up.
Yeah, that all of his stuff would have been dumped on the ground.
I think it would have. I think you're right. I think that's actually really interesting that you brought that up.
So, I don't think, apparently his mother and some other people think that he was set upon in his sleep by wolves on his first night there. But again, I don't see how that could be the case. I just don't.
It'd be a statistical anomaly in multiple ways.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and again, his stuff would have been dumped out on the ground instead of remaining in the hammock. So
I think that's actually one of the more mysterious things about it. If the gun was still in the hammock, bag, I don't know, maybe the bag somehow got stuck to it. I was thinking just while you were talking earlier that maybe he was not in his sleeping bag. He was just like on top of it or you know what I mean? And then, but I still think there's a high likelihood it would have knocked his stuff out, that it was still in the hammock.
Yeah.
Though I suppose it's possible that this is so morbid, but in the process of, we're going to talk about it later.
Okay.
Cut that snap. For what it's worth, I checked. The scene is just an even worse match for other predators in the area. So yeah. Basically thinking about that.
Yeah, like we have bears, we have mountain lions, right?
Yeah, they're all up there, but this is an even, I can tell you because I actually work very closely around the bear enclosure at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
If a bear got in there to do this, it would have made such a huge mess.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's hard to imagine the bear not ripping the entire tarp down and the hammock and everything. Yeah.
It's just how subtle. They do it.
Yeah.
No, mountain lions maybe are a little bit a better match, but you got to understand, even more than wolves, mountain lions tap out in the wild around 120 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
When a mountain lion takes down a human, there is a struggle every single time, much less a fit, strong 29-year-old man would put up possibly actually
he's just outside his tarp and he spots the mountain lion about to pounce. He turns and runs for his hammock where the gun is. The mountain lion chases him down, pounces, brings him down just short of the hammock, and then just basically rips his neck open.
Blood wouldn't be in the hammock in that scenario.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's a possibility. I don't know.
I wouldn't totally rule mountain lions out, but you got to understand, mountain lions killing a full-grown man like that with no sign of struggle, not a thing.
Yeah.
It just doesn't ever happen.
I just don't think this was an animal attack. I do think the animals opportunistically came along later on and had themselves a snack. I think that's beyond debate.
I think that definitely happened, regardless of what his cause of death was.
Yeah, so...
You ready for four? Attack?
Yeah. What's number four?
Theory number four is a terrible accident.
Well, they did find the kids, as we mentioned, all kinds of knives and blades and stuff at the campsite. I assume they had a machete, for example, probably an axe as well, and lots of cool knives. We know he liked to whittle, kept his blades very sharp, like razor sharp. In fact, he shaved with his knives.
Mm-hmm.
So he kept them sharp. So imagine he was whittling or shaving or something and the blade slips. And he, like, say, he's shaving, and he's just, like, slits his neck open, and blood goes, hosing out everywhere. I don't know if he had cell service up where he was at or not.
They don't say that specifically in the reporting, but it did sound like he was texting his family. So if it was not right there, it was certainly nearby. He had cell service.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not going to do you any good. Call 911 and give them directions out there. Well, they're going to get there 2 hours later. What's that?
Yeah.
He would have bled out. He would have known. Yeah. The police said they found bloodied pieces of cloth around the tent.
I think, I couldn't tell if it was supposed to mean that what they said is that they think he may have been using his clothes as like makeshift bandages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he slips while he's shaving, slices his neck open and tries to bandage it up, but doesn't quite succeed. Collapses there on the spot. The animals come along and, make a meal out of him, carry his stuff away. I mean,
I think this one works pretty good, except for one thing that we already talked about.
Yeah.
When we were talking about
the knives were all accounted for, right?
Yeah. They're all accounted for.
Yeah.
And they were in their sheaths with no blood on them.
Yeah.
There was no sign of a sheath or a scabbard that was missing its blade. So, it's hard to imagine. I mean, I guess maybe like a wolf just grabbed the knife like a stick it was playing fetch with and took off with it. But I just don't think that happened.
I doubt it. I doubt it very much. Yeah, but it could have been. It could have been. Yeah, it could have been. The wolf says like, hey, yeah, souvenir. Yeah, baby. But I don't think wolves really think that way. Yeah.
Sorry, you got any final theories about what happened?
A couple of possibilities here. It's like nobody's really suggested the possibility of a beaver attack.
Beaver attack.
He was right next to their spot, right next to their dam, and frankly, right in their territory. Why the hell shouldn't they? And a beaver, by the way,
really attack people.
Yeah, beavers, but they could. What if these were psycho beavers? I don't know. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally joking here. I do kind of like the idea of beaver attack, but beavers are actually cute, gentle little animals. I can't imagine a beaver actually ever attacking a human being.
So I work in the Northwest area of the zoo quite a bit, and I do know beavers can do a lot of damage if you mess with one.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. They're not going to go into a man's tent. It just never would do that.
Maybe he offended them. He's like looking for a piece of wood to whittle on, and he spots a really nice looking shaped piece of wood right there in the beaver dam. So he goes and jerks it out and does some damage and makes the beavers mad. I like that idea. The beavers all have a little. They have a little conference. Like, oh, damn him! I'm so sick of these people.
Go. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, not really liking that.
I don't think so. What other possibilities are out there? Aliens? There's aliens.
Could have been a Alien death ray attack?
Alien tractor beam screw up, you know, and they go to like tractor beam him up to the spacecraft. They weren't precise enough. And they wound up like chopping off an arm and a leg. And
Maybe.
So, okay. These are all of our silly theories.
I'm not going to go on a whole rant about it, but I do want to say that Jordan Grider has ended up in some like missing 411 type theories where people seem to believe that there's some kind of cryptid responsible for all of these murders or deaths in the national parks. I think it's just silly all the way through. So I think we can probably wrap this one up saying, I
don't know either. I think I still, you know, when I said earlier that it could have been a Wendigo, you know, I still think that's a reasonable possibility here. Somebody who was, you know, under the control of a Wendigo spirit, or believed he was, and just goes into the camp and kills him, you know, and eats him. So that's entirely possible. Something like that. I think that's certainly, like, actually in my mind, more plausible than, say, Sasquatch attacking him.
It is
more plausible, I think. But
I guess I don't know so much about like evil spirit Wendigo type things. Yeah. I don't know how much I believe or don't believe in that, but I do think kind of creepily enough.
Yeah, knocked him into sleep, or you know, maybe not quite in his sleep, but next to his hammock while he was trying to get to his gun, something like that, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
But you know, I'm pretty comfortable saying I don't know what happened. I'm not necessarily leaning too far into the foul play theory,
because
it's a weird murder if it's a mere murder, right? There's no financial motive. There's no real evidence of a struggle that we can see. And there may have been one that just didn't take place in the tent, like you were saying, but it's odd. You got to say it's an odd one.
Yeah, I know it is. But I wonder, this is a fairly recent one. This is only a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll find out a little more. Maybe if there is actually, say, a Wendigo on the loose in northern Minnesota, we might find some more, like, you know, half-eaten corpses out in the woods and stuff like that. You know, stay tuned and all that stuff. I mean, maybe we'll learn more about this. I don't know. But it's one of those things. I guess stay the hell out of the woods, you know. Stay in the city where you're safe. Yeah.
No, go out in the woods where it's safe. Go to the woods. Go thee to the woods and enjoy them. But, you know, be careful out there. Don't do any weird solo bush missions.
Yeah, I guess that's true too. Yeah, probably having companions along is helpful. It's really a strange little story, and creepy little story too. I mean,
I would like to remind everybody, you know, this is not a very well covered story.
No.
So keep the word out. We might be able to find something out about this guy, this fascinating outsider. And you know, he lived as his own man, his own way, right until the very last moment. And hopefully if we keep this in the news and keep this on people's mind, this could be a thing that eventually we find out more about.
Yeah, no, like I said, it might very well be that we've got some sort of psycho killer wandering those woods. So we might find this out someday soon. So stay tuned, and maybe we'll be talking about this one again. Who knows?
Well, let's let these people know how to get a hold of us, and let us know what they think happened to Jordan Grider.
Absolutely. In fact, there is a way to get a hold of us. It's called email.
Email works. If you got a story suggestion, email is the best way.
Absolutely.
Don't forget to find us on social media. We have a real fun thing going on with our Facebook and our Twitter right now, where we have our very own mystery about my chicken coop. We're going to call it a cryptid, tried to get into my chicken coop, and it used so much strength that I can't figure out what animal could have done this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you put a camera out there, I know, but so far the animal has not come back, right? Whatever this thing was.
Yeah, so far not. But the camera is still there. So I hope to catch this thing, and we may have our own cryptid mystery to solve. And please leave us a like and a review, you know, on whatever pod app you use, Apple. It really helps people find out about the show, helps us grow our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. We do appreciate that. And if you have any theories about Vincent's chickens and what it is that's trying to murder them, let us know about that too. I gotta say, I feel sad for you. I feel sorry for your poor little chickens. That must have been terrifying for them. Poor little deers.
Let's sign off, and then we'll
about it. Next week we will talk to you again. Till then, ciao.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Would be infinitesimally rare.
Infinitesimally?
Infinitesimally, I don't know.
Bigger sound.
Infinitesimally, what? Infinitesimally? How do you say that word?
Infinitesimally?
Infinitesimally?
Infinitesimally.
Okay. All right. Snap.
All right. And I guess you could pronounce it, presume that the E is silent. Say
that's infinite, how I've always said it.
Infinitesimally. I've always heard it infinitesimally, but
infinitesimally. Yeah. I think I'm saying it right. I'm going to snap and say it the way I say it, and then people can make fun of me.
All right.
Hang on 1 second, Joe.
Yeah.
Can you hear the chicken sounds?
Yeah. Is that your chickens or is that your quail?
Chicken. Well, I have baby chicks too right now.
Oh, so. You do? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.